the more positively minded life. Please stay tuned.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests that help you lead a more positively minded life. Here today to move your mind around. We want to move it around because we want to try seeing things from a different angle. You see, the concept of the positive mind is not that everything should be perceived positively, but that if you could perceive without judgment, you will feel more positive. Therefore, to perceive without judgment means that you've got to be careful for those little things in your mind, those filters in your mind that tell you perceive things certain ways. And so we're going to examine that today. But before we do, we have to go to our celebration. Today we're going to celebrate Joanna's birthday. Joanna from Dr. Bergman's office. Why is Joanna important? Because Joanna is listening to WBAI and broadcasting WBAI in her office for the first time in this physician's office. So welcome, Joanna, just as we welcome all new WBAI listeners. And I've got in the studio with me today, Gianna Valerio, and I have Lisa Arnone with us as well. It's Joanna's birthday.
Welcome to The Positive Mind, Joanna. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Joanna. Welcome to the station.
Welcome to the station is quite a thing, you know. It's really a remarkable station to be a part of. So today I want you to look at things a little differently. When I get done with this, you should be able to perceive death as a friend. So you can see where I'm going, but I'm not really going in that direction. The story starts with a little girl I know once. And this little girl came in to see me as a therapist, and she did a painting. We used to do these little stick figure paintings. She did a drawing, and in her drawing she had a little girl who was crying because there were tears in her eyes, a mother who was standing next to her holding her hand, who had a frown in her face, right, like an upside-down frown, and a balloon. The girl was holding a balloon, and the balloon was smiling. So I said to the little girl, oh, look at that little girl. She feels pretty bad. I said, why is she crying? She said, because her mother's yelling at her. I said, that's so sad. She said, no, it's not so sad. And I said, why? She said, because the balloon is smiling. Now that touched me on some level, when your balloon is smiling. So today I want to talk about when your balloon is smiling. And this is when there is some part of you that you find really dislikable, but that is essential to your being, and who finds strength in just its functioning, even if it's something that you would consider crazy. Let me give you an example. I know a man who's a manager, and everybody sees him as a very nice man, but they see him as a schlump. You know what that is? He just can't stand up for himself. So whenever anyone brings him something that bothers them, remember he's in charge, he sympathizes, empathizes, and then doesn't do anything, you know, doesn't get anything done because he claims that I would have gotten it done, but that person over there blocked me. That person got in my way. So then everybody gets mad at the person who got in their way, but they don't get mad at him. So then people, when they were talking about him, one person said to me, you know, he's really spineless because he doesn't stand up for himself. And I said, oh, no. Oh, no, this man has the ultimate spine. He's got the most powerful spine. He's got a spine so big that he could do anything to anybody and never get blamed. He's got an invisible spine. The most powerful of all spines. You can't see it. You can't hurt it. You can't break it. Did you ever know anybody who seems to be a passive victim mate to a dominant boorish partner? You know, the guy that maybe he's an alcoholic and she's just trying to take care of him, and she's trying to take care of him and everybody feels bad for her. And he's just, he's just lost. You know, he's just drunk or boorish or loud or something. And everybody feels bad for her. And they say, why do you take this insult? And he says, because I love him. So now that becomes enough of an answer. See, secretly, that other person, in this case is she, is in charge of that they are the victim, but they are getting a chance to exercise power, which is the power to have this mate be this abusive self that everybody dislikes. So what kind of power is that? What kind of life is that? Is that kind of life that anybody wants to lead? Do you want to be an unhappy person? Well, you know, unhappy has a certain power. One of the things about being an unhappy person is people are always trying to make you feel good. You have this power. You walk around with this idea that you look miserable and people are going to want you to feel better. They're going to want you to feel better. And so they try to make you feel better. Okay, so secretly a person is in charge, and secretly it looks like the other person is in charge, but it's really you who are in charge, or it's really the person who seems to be. Now, what would be the power of being a victim? Let's say somewhere a long time ago you made a deal with yourself, and you said to yourself, I am not going to let myself ever get hurt. So I'm not going to let myself get hurt. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be alone. I won't trust anybody. I won't let anybody in. I know a woman who lives in absolute horrible situations. She feels terribly conflicted, crazy stuff, including a lot of violence. And her children think she's an angel. They have no idea who she is. One day, her boyfriend told them, you know, she hit me the other day and she was really beaten up. And they said, you got to be kidding. We've grown up with this mother and we've never seen her ever raise a hand to anything. She can hide herself from everybody. And everybody thinks she's just sweet and just wonderful. So how would that be and why would that be? Because that balloon of hers, the balloon now, what I'm referring to as the balloon is the neurosis, is the dedication, and even neurosis is too much of a judgment. It's that part of you that exercises power. And the power could be a form of craziness. For a lot of people, it is. So maybe, what is her dedication? Maybe the dedication is, I'm going to be alone. I'm going to not be vulnerable to anybody. And on the other hand, if it makes me angry, I'm going to find somebody else who's going to be angry for me. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. So, what I'm trying to bring to you is a concept that the part of you about yourself that you hate the most very often is a powerful place in you.
Then, Armand, where is the strength in depression? Because it certainly doesn't seem like a strength. Like, it doesn't give you strength.
Good question, Jana. Depression is such an interesting thing. Just imagine depression. You go in a cave. Nobody can reach you. You close down the walls. You lay in your bed. They try to get you out of bed. They try to talk to you. Oh, you got to get out today. Today you got to take a walk. And they shake you and they work at you and they try to get you, but they can't budge you. And you could sink so deep into this place that you become like an immovable object. Immovable object. How powerful is that? And they shake you and they say, give her drugs, and you resist the assault. Give her food and resist that. You know, give her love and you resist that. And they do everything. They get mad at you and you resist that. How much more powerful can you be? So, let's say you went through life feeling powerless as a kid and you said, I'm going to be powerful. One of the ways that you exercise your power is through depression. And depression works at holding people at bay. It really works at doing it. All right? So depression is one of those resistances.
Okay, so how would you perceive this in someone who is very paranoid?
You know, paranoia is an interesting thing. So therefore, let me just tell you, Lisa, when I work with people, when people come to see me, what I'm always looking at and what I always tell them about is how their dysfunctionality, what they call dysfunctionality, serves them. Like a woman called me the other day and she said, there, I did it again. I had another relationship with another guy. We had an honest relationship. It was really clear. And he went off and decided he would go back to Brazil and live with his wife, his ex-wife in Brazil, because they have kids. And he left me. And so I asked her questions about it. And she said, well, it was the best relationship I ever had because I was really in love with him. And I said, the best relationship you ever had, what made it the best? And she said, the best was because he allowed me to get close to him. He was giving me answers. And I was being straight and honest with him. So I said, more than before. More than ever before? She said, yes, absolutely more than ever before. I was trying to get closer to him and show him more of myself. So I said, so how did this fall apart? She said, well, I knew at the beginning he wasn't that far into me. You know, he wasn't as into me as I was into him. And it did work out very badly. And she said, but better than all the other ones. Okay, so here's what I thought. I thought, okay, this person once again proved to herself that she could only be alone, that she has that she can't really trust anybody else, that she can be, that she's going to find herself to be resistant to all deep relationships that may be vulnerable, but she's going to choose each time a person who is just allows a little closer than the one before. And so she's learning. So her strength, which is the strength she has to resist any true love. You got to hear those words. Everybody out there has resisted it, and I don't blame you one bit. Love is a terribly painful thing. Love gives somebody access to your heart in a way that you just, you know, it's hard to believe the amount of emotional pain that you could get. Different than physical pain. As a kid, you get it. As a child, you want your mother to love you, you know what I mean? And they don't love you, and it's disgusting, it's horrible. And you swear to yourself, I'm never going to go that way again, or you want your father to approve of you. And you swear to yourself, I'm never going to feel that again. And then later in life, as an adult, you keep choosing these relationships where that never really comes in there because you're both lying to each other all the time. Which means, and I don't mean that judgmentally, it means that you just never tell the other person who you really are. So back to this, what happens to you, what happens to your mind, and what happens to your being is you live out this part of you that feels the most powerful, which is the part of you that most resists a true, real life. What does that mean? Why would you have to resist that? So everything we do, every bit of what we call craziness, but I don't really mean it as a judgmental way, but all the things we do, like paranoia, which you're talking about, Lisa, or like depression, they have a function. Let's talk about the obsessive compulsive disorder, right? Let's talk about that. Now, look, obsessive compulsive is perfect. It means somebody who does repeated tasks over and over again, and they can't get away from it, and they get caught in things. Or let's even start with addiction. Addiction is wonderful, because addiction, once you get there, when I say wonderful, look at how powerful it is. The substance to which you're addicted has a voice. It says to you, come on, let's get together, you and I, and we're going to go off in a corner and enjoy each other. And the two of you get together and you have a sublime experience. Sublime. You do a little cocaine, it's sublime. You do a little marijuana, it's sublime. You even have a cigarette. I was watching an old movie where they just lit up a cigarette. Two of them lit a cigarette. You look at the look on their faces. They both inhaled that cigarette. And you said, wow, look at that. Look at that powerful feeling. Even a cigarette could be a sublime feeling. Now, then we hate ourselves for smoking. But the power, the powerful person is the person in the addiction. The weaker person is the person fighting that. Because there's this sense of power you have when you're caught in an addiction. Even addictive love is like that. Think about romance. Think about this intense love that we have for other people. And it's so intense, and you fall in love, and you want to tell all your friends about it, about this wonderful love relationship, but he didn't call because he was supposed to call, or when you called him, you noticed something on his cell phone that had a text message to somebody else, and now you bring it to your friends, and you're all involved in this thing. And that's a part of you. That's a part of you that's just wrapped up in the compulsion. You call it love, but it's compulsion. You're now in this. Now all you're going to do is obsess about it, think about it, behave about it, move about it. But it's better than sitting home watching television. You know what I mean? It's better than just sitting around reading a magazine. You're involved, and you feel the power of your involvement. Bonnie Bedelia. Bonnie Bedelia is a woman who did a, on TED.com, she did a thing about bacteria. I strongly recommend everybody look at this TED.com about bacteria. She talked about how bacteria, they get into our bodies, and what power they have when they all get together and decide to strike a force to get you, you know, to get you ill or to get you something like that. But the bacteria are not as bad, and the bacteria aren't sick, and the bacteria aren't weak. They decide at one point to show their power. All of your neurosis, all of your problems, all the ways you function, all the things you do wrong has a power. Let's talk about body images. Let's say you're too fat or too skinny, or you don't like this part of your body or that part of your body, or you're too old. All of these perceptions of yourself serve a purpose. My job, when you come in to see me, is to help you see that this is serving a purpose, that it's doing something for you, and that the way it's doing something for you is going to be, if you could uncover it, is you could eventually befriend it. How do you befriend your depression? So a man came to see me years ago, and he told me about his depression, and I said to him, using a Gestalt technique, imagine your depression is on that pillow. And I gave him a pillow, and I said, hold on to this pillow. It was a throw pillow. And I said, hold on to this and just hug it and say, this is my depression. I'm holding on to it. I said, okay. And so he said that. And then I put my hands on the pillow and I tried to take it away. He said, I'm going to take it away from you. And automatically, of course, he clutched the pillow and held it. He said, no, you're not. And I said, yes, I am. I'm going to take it away. And I pulled a little harder. And, of course, he held on to it stronger. And I said, give me that depression. I'm going to rip it out of you. And he said, no, you won't. I'll kill you before I let you take it away. And out of the mouths of babes, I mean, then the balloon was smiling. There it was, right there. His real purpose. Sometimes I think the real purpose that people have when going into therapy is to prove that their neurosis is stronger than a therapist. I go in, I try it out, I take medication, I try it out, and I stay the same. And then you just stay the same and you walk away and saying, you see, nothing could change me. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. we're exploring what they call misfunction in a different kind of way. We're exploring it from a place where I believe, well, I believe this is the only way you could really go about it, because unless you could find that part of you that is, that you hate, that you think is dysfunctional, and then look at it and say, all right, there you are, my buddy. And let's say paranoia, for example. Let's go back to that, Lisa. So one of the things that paranoia makes you do, believe it or not, is it makes you feel important. Because if you weren't paranoid, if you weren't worried that somebody wanted to hurt you, then you would be unimportant to everybody. Paranoia makes you believe that somebody's thinking about you all the time, even though in a negative way, and somebody wants to hurt you. Look how important you are. Now, isn't that better than believing there's nothing wrong, nobody really cares about you, that you're really invisible? So paranoia validates or gives you a concept that you're to be concerned about. Now, what's interesting about paranoia, that's great, is once you're paranoid and you start talking like a paranoid person, people become afraid of you. And when they become afraid of you, you perceive them being afraid of you, and you can point at them and see, they treated me funny. And that validates your paranoia. So then the whole system works. So everybody out there listening today is going to have an example of where your thing that you hate the most about yourself, and if you don't, when you call me and I'll show it to you, the thing you hate the most about yourself is probably the real basis of the strongest part of you. Here's the deal. If we could tap into this character, if we could find the part of you that is the most powerful at keeping you, even if it's a dysfunctional part, maybe we could get some of the muscle there so that you could live a different life. But in order to do it, one thing for sure, you can't try to rip it away. You can't take it away. You can't threaten it and say you have to be another way. We have to uncover it, look at it, and celebrate it. Think about some of the things you would celebrate in your life. Think about some of the things. Like, how about being a caretaker? You're a caretaker. So you go around life as a caretaker, and you look for people to take care of. And you keep finding people who are minimally dysfunctional, but somewhat dysfunctional. And then as you're with them, they become more and more dysfunctional. And you become more and more of a caretaker. And eventually, they become even sicker and sicker. And you become more and more responsible for them. And you resent it. Now you start getting angry at them. Now you're angry at them when they ask you to pick something up when you know that they could probably pick it up themselves. And you get angry at them for this. So now you're walking around angry at people who you have crippled in your own way. But now, that sounds like a vicious thing to do, but it's not. It's like this is you exercising that part of you. Once you get to the caretaker part of you, you feel like you're yourself. But when you're not taking care of anything, when there's no one to take care of, you don't like it so well. You really don't like it so well. Or there's another part of you that wants to be a star and wants people to applaud them. And your whole life is about getting applause for what you do and the work that you do and being on stage and stuff like that. And you keep waiting to get celebration. You keep waiting for people to say, well, wonderful you are. But what do you do in order to be in the profession, especially the dramatic arts? You go to places where you try out and you get people saying no all the time. And they reject you, and they reject you, and they reject you, and you become a rejection expert. You become somebody who can't be hurt by rejection. What a powerful thing. I mean, most people I know get destroyed by rejection. But when you're in the arts, especially the performing arts, you know, you just get rejected and upon rejected, and you become immune to rejection. And that becomes part of your life. Or how about that deep romantic person? The person who is always unique, always different, always special, has to be. They're terrified of being like everybody else. And And so they have to make sure they never look like anybody or sound like anybody else. And what about that person who's always, and then people laugh at you and people make fun of you, and you turn around and you see why I can't be like anybody else, because nobody will accept me, and nobody will accept you when you seem like you're always the odd one out, because you've made yourself the odd one out. But look how beautiful that is. This means you never have to be vulnerable to whether people love you or not, or really care about you or not. Or you could just be somebody who, like we said before, lives in a cave. Right? Or the person who worries about everything. How about being one of those? You worry about everything. You worry about this. You worry about that. You're always worried, 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 worried. It's like you're constantly worried. And if you don't have enough to worry about, you find things to worry about. I remember a woman who was saying to me the other day, her plate was clean and she didn't have anything to worry about. And her daughter said, "You know, Mom, I really need you." Well, my daughter must have said it 100 times, but I remember this woman came to me and said, "You know, my daughter said she really needs me. And now I'm gonna give her attention like I never gave her before." And of course, it turned out to be a disaster, which was exactly what the plan was. Or another lady who came to me and told me about a friend of hers who has cancer, right? And she says, "My friend has cancer." And she says, "You know, I've known this lady for 5 years. She said to me, "You know, it's like I have the cancer." I said, "How did it become that you have the cancer since your friend has cancer?" It's like she's like a sister to me. I said, wait a minute. I've known you for 5 years. You barely even mentioned this person's voice. How did she suddenly become a sister to you? Because in the need to find some depth and some importance, suddenly she just converted her mind to become really attached to this person with this thing. So we have all different ways of doing it. You know, each of us have a different way of creating a drama in our life, a tragedy in our life, and looking at it as if it's really bad. But you know, my friends, if you really look at it closely, with each person you see who is running a pretty relatively unhappy life, their balloon is smiling. The balloon, the part of them that's on top of it, looking from a distance, saying, "This is just the way I like it to be." That's why people never take your advice. That's why if you have somebody who's dysfunctional, you say to them, "Hey, here's some advice." Nobody ever listens to your advice. Who wants your advice? Who wants to really change? Just teach somebody how to be better at being the way they are. So, that's it. I run a long mouth on that one. We're going to take your calls about this at 212-209-2900, my friends, 212-209-2900. When we get back from our break, we're going to take a short break. We're going to give you a music break. And what I'm saying to you is it really pays to appreciate your craziness. Just be okay with it. To say to yourself, "All right, I got the idea," instead of hating yourself for it. And if you do that, it doesn't guarantee you're going to change. Maybe you'll just settle into being that person. After all, maybe you'll just be permanently crazy. That's okay. But the part of us that is the illusion here, the part of us that stops us from changing, is imagining that we really hate it. We really hate being that way. Nah. No, we don't. This is our balloon, once again, smiling. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to be back with you in just a very short while. Play a little music. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
Very good. I've always very been crazy perfect. In the trouble that it's put me through. Been busted for things that I did and I didn't do. I can't say I'm proud of all of the things that I've done, but I can say I've never intentionally hurt anyone. I've always been different with one foot over the line. I shouldn't complain.
kept me from going insane. Beautiful lady, are you sure that you understand the chances you're taking loving a free living man? Are you really sure you really want what you see? Be careful of something that's just what you want it to be.
And this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. It's Waylon Jennings. I've always been a crazy cowboy. I've always been crazy. No, not Bonnie Bedelia, although it would have been interesting if Bonnie Bedelia did do the... it's Bonnie Bassler. Bonnie Bassler, who did the TED.com. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Now, in case you think that a negativity or something perceived as negative can't be happy, let me bring you a challenge in your thinking for a minute. Do you think a virus could be happy? So let's say you're a virus, and you're floating around, and you're saying, here I am, my job is to multiply, right? That's what viruses are supposed to do. And so you float and you get into somebody's nose. And you're in somebody's nose now, and they've got the virus, and you're there, and you do, okay, boys, we're in here now. We're in Lisa's nose. We're going to make Lisa's nose. Now we're going to multiply, many of us. And then after a while, we get a whole bunch of us. We're going to scratch the inside of her nose so that she sneezes. And when she sneezes, she's going to send out a million of us into the air, where some of us will fly out a window, some of us will be on the furniture, some of us will be somewhere for the next person to pick it up. So our job as a virus is to get sneezed out, right? That's our first job. Do you ever notice how good it feels to sneeze? I wonder if it's not the virus that feels good and not us, because that sneeze seems like such an achievement. So then you come along and you get some Afrin or whatever you use, and you spray it up your nose, and the virus says, wait a minute, hold on a second, what's going on here? Look at this, we better hide in the corner. we better hide out. You know, Viafrin doesn't get rid of viruses, but what it does is it does make the virus hide. And so the virus hides under a little piece of flesh somewhere in your nose, waiting till the afrin wears off. Then in the middle of the night, it comes and it says, okay, she's sleeping. Let's multiply now. And they multiply and multiply and multiply. And in the middle of your sleep, you wake up and you sneeze. Phew. And your mate, if you happen to have one there, wakes up the next morning and says, you know, I feel a little coldy. We never know why, but the virus is going to celebrate. Now, do you think that viruses feel good or feel bad? Well, if you're a virus and somebody suppresses you and stops you from doing your job, I guess you don't feel as good as if you do your job. Therefore, illness in itself can be positive or negative in the way that it feels. Therefore, all illnesses that we have, the psychological as well as the physical, have both a sense of power built into them, which is, I know that it's a tough subject, but cancer, for example, is a very powerful thing. And there's a tremendous power to cancer. Very, very powerful. But if we're always running after it, if we're always running away from it, if we're always afraid of it, that's one thing. Imagine if we could tap into it. Imagine if one of the ways that you treated cancer was to have it voraciously eat something that killed it, which is one of the ways they try to treat it. See, they're going to have its voracious appetite kill itself. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So your life, the way you live, I claim, is a reflection of some need you have and a source of your power. And I want to show you that power. And today and tomorrow we're going to talk about this. And then when we get to that power and what that power is, we're going to try and pursue it just a little further. 212-209-2900 is our number over here. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello
there.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, Mr. DeMille?
Thank you for waiting, yes. Call me Armand.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Billy, and I wish you could help me to locate where my power is, because my life has been one with so much pain in it, and it's all come stemmed through my heart, my the way I love, and I can't seem to stop it. Like, I resent myself for it.
What is it about the way you love that you resent?
Huh?
What is it about the way you love, Billy, that you resent?
For example, I could be getting hurt repeatedly over and over. For example, I am trying to move away from the Christian faith, and I keep coming back to it, because I can't seem to live without being a Christian. And it was that the Christian faith was where I was damaged initially in my life very badly.
Well, I'm not going to talk about Christianity because I get too many letters. But
right.
I will talk about the fact that we very often get trapped in systems that are harmful to us, and we stay in the systems that harm us the most. Now, the system itself can be harmful to anybody. Now, Billy, let me take this back to you in childhood. You said with your heart. Do you fall into romantic relationships, or is it more the stuff with the church?
I can't hear you.
Is it romantic relationships that you wind up in that wind up hurting you so much?
No, not so much. It's my relationship with God.
Right. Okay, now therefore, Billy, when you were little, did you have an older brother?
Yeah.
And did your older brother get along with your father?
Did he get along with my father? Not too good, not too great in the beginning, no.
Did anybody get along with your father?
No, because they were scared of him. He was a crazy person.
And you were afraid of him too, right? You were afraid of your father, too.
Oh, terrified.
Yeah. So much so that you were almost afraid of being a girl, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you know I'm touching on something, right? Tell me about the part of you that was afraid of being a girl.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know how to speak about her because, like, she was assaulted and molested when I was young, and she's gone, I don't know, like, she's gone somewhere.
Who is she?
She's a Duffer. That's my middle name. And she's my inner child, and...
And she was really abused as a kid, right?
I don't know how to reach her.
Yes, but so you're saying that there's two parts of you that are present. And one part of you is this part that was very small, female, and vulnerable. And there's other part of you that's a little tougher but gets damaged very easy. You're like a coconut. You got all this softness in the middle of it, and on the outside you have this hard shell.
But
the hard shell keeps getting beaten and beaten and beaten. You know, it's like it's in the ocean. It keeps getting thrown around the rocks. On the inside is this very, very soft center. Probably.
Yes.
So one of the things that are happening to you, Billy, is you're repeating this battle over and over again. You have God as your opponent right now. And it's like you're fighting with God. And the war between you and God keep this little girl from ever having to appear, because you're constantly in the battle.
Can you speak a little louder? I can't hear you.
Because you're constantly, if you can't, you know, one of the things you could do is you could listen to this program again later and hear it. But one of the things that you're doing is you're protecting yourself by keeping this battle going. This battle is your balloon. This is you fighting for your life, which is the only thing you know how to do. And so for that, what I say we have to do is congratulate the part of you that fights for your life, that survives. Underneath it, go ahead.
In other words, congratulate that this part of me that's talking to you right now.
Exactly.
To strengthen me then.
It's a strength. Yeah, as crazy as it is, as involved as it gets, as nutty as it chooses to be, all the imaginations about the conflicts with God, all of that is a piece of your muscle. It's the only muscle left. Because underneath that is this mushy little kid that's very, very vulnerable. And you're not going to go there and expose that child until you feel safe enough to do that. How old are you now, Billy?
I'm 55.
Yeah. You've got time. You're going to get there.
I'm going to get there, you said?
You're going to get there. I hear it. You're growing.
So, in other words, who do I embrace? Embrace this part of me?
Embrace the part of you that you've hated for so long.
That what?
That you've hated for so long. The part of you that gets so unhappy. Just embrace it. Say, okay, kid. It's you and me against the world.
Oh.
Thanks for calling in, Billy.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Now, that's very interesting, because when you have multiple disorder or you have a double or you have another personality, it really shows you exactly what we're talking about the person you could befriend. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
By the way, before we say anything, how did I know she had this problem being a woman? Because she had a name, Billy, that could either be a man's name or a woman's name. That's what gave me the hint. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there. Who is this?
I'm now an older woman, and I'm a little bit, I had a health scare, and I think I'm going to be okay, but I always played it safe my whole life. I never really challenged myself. I started a small business and employed people who never questioned me. My husband just supported me. I think I had kids because I wanted people to love me. And, I'm going to be 62 this year. I was born 1950, and with this house scare, I've just realized how safe I've played it, and I haven't really lived.
So what is the health scare that you had?
I had a problem with my reproductive system.
And is it possible? It's a tumor, right? So this tumor gave you a chance to get underneath all your safety and find whatever muscle you really had to deal with something. Because the other way, by controlling everything and picking everything under your control, it gets kind of, that's ordinary. But if you wanted to find your real muscle, what we would do is give you a physical challenge that you would really have to step up to. Now, what strength did you discover in yourself to deal with this? Were you very frightened?
To be honest with you, I always felt like I was so special, nothing bad would really happen. So there was a lot of disbelief when I had the health scare.
Okay.
I'm not going to admit this to everybody, but I always thought I was better than other people. And I didn't have to live by other people's rules.
All right. And then when this came along, did that change it or does that keep it just the same way?
I think it kind of reaffirmed it when it was just a bit, when really nothing was wrong.
Okay, so perfectly good. You see, there we have it. There we have your balloon. Your balloon is, I'm better than everybody. This way you don't have to come down to our level. This way you don't have to be vulnerable. This way you don't really have to take any risks. So then, you know, you have your whole life and it's doing so well and you've got everything organized and everybody controlled. And it's kind of, I don't get a chance to test myself anymore. So we give you a physical health scare. And that gets you a chance to step back up into your balloon where you say, see, I'm better than everybody else. It doesn't really touch me. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Well, good for you. How would you like it to be different?
I would have liked to be more courageous and not rationalize when I did something wrong. When I hurt people, I rationalized it. When, you know, even my relationship, my husband loves me, but, you know, he...
All right, take the other position for a moment with me. Instead of being more courageous, instead of being somebody who is more sensitive to the needs of other people, see what it's like to say, screw them.
That's what I've always done.
Well, do it now.
All right.
Say it to me out loud. The hell with them.
The hell with everybody else.
Go ahead. Follow that thought.
The hell with everybody else.
Go ahead.
I don't have to follow other people's rules.
That's right.
I can pretend to be somebody I'm not. I can balloon myself up and get approval by playing it safe, by surrounding myself with people who don't question me.
Good for you. What's your name?
Bessie,
good for you. You see that part of you. Now, I wish everybody who were listening would be able to pull out that part of themselves and see it. Because that person who feels that way is a friend of yours, right?
This is the thing. I think it was my enemy. I think
yeah.
It stopped me from growing.
Yeah, that's what you think. But I'm telling you, it helped you survive.
But surviving isn't really living.
That's right.
Beautiful.
I understand, Bessie. But stop making an enemy of it, and you'll find you're going to move into the next place.
But, Armand, I was thinking the problem was I didn't make an enemy
I know you were. I know, and I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying don't make an enemy of it, make a friend of it, and then watch yourself grow from there. You don't have to make an enemy out of it.
I just don't want to end up like those Republican politicians who think they're better than everybody else.
That's a real possibility. In fact, you might even wind up being a communist. I have no idea. But any number of things could happen to you that would be just terrible. For all I know, you could wind up voting for Bush or something. No, Bessie, you're a very conscious person. You're a conscious person who seems to be growing. And I believe that as you befriend the part of you and verbalize the part of you that feels better, the part that you're ashamed of, you're going to find yourself growing in the direction you want to go. Okay, and thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And don't become a Republican. Well, wait, this is WBAI. You know, on this station, we are not allowed to say one thing or another about politics because we're a publicly funded station. So if you want to become a Republican, go right ahead. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a question in regard to, you know, anger management. I have been just been diagnosed as an adult with bad attention deficit, not the hyperactivity portion of it. I went out of state and had a SPECT scan, if you're familiar with that. You know, some doctors don't validate it or refuse to discuss the, you know, the relevance of it. But they said I have a lot of cognitive problems, you know, and they asked me, well, did you ever suffer anything traumatic, anything, you know, some sort of a head injury? And I said, no, but my dad, you know, my dad smacked me around, you know, and he was really abusive. So all of the drugs that I read about that are useful in trying to get all those neurons firing the brain, I can't get a doctor to prescribe me.
All right, let me ask you a question. Let me get you a question.
Pot.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me ask you a question now. What's your first name?
Fred.
Fred. Hey, Fred, if you were to take the voice of the ADD, the attention deficit disorder, and you were to say the following, right? You would say it with me. You know, I don't pay attention to things. I can't keep my attention on anything. I move from thing to thing. I start one thing and then I pick up another, and life is always an adventure for me. Instead of me getting stuck in one place, I move on to another place, because as a kid I learned the following. In my family, if you stood in one place, you got beat over the head more than once. So I learned to move. I'm a swift-moving, fast-moving guy. My brain will move me from spot to spot. That's the way I am. At least I'm not getting pelted in the head. And I appreciate that that's where I've come to and that's where I am. So if you could find that part of yourself that likes the attention deficit avoidance, I would call it, because, you know, you're really avoiding being in one spot. I think that may take you on a beginning of where you want to go. Because from what you're telling me about your use of marijuana and about the way that you use kind of sedatives, you're saying to me on another part of you, you're trying to mask that part of you. You're always trying to calm down. What you need, Fred, is you need to make a friend of this part of you, of the part of you that just is too fast to get beaten. And so all
that
the time
that doesn't aid me. Excuse me. That doesn't aid me in day-to-day life. Isn't any use outside of the workplace? You know what I'm saying?
But it's just to be use inside your heart. Just give your mind a little rest. Hey, I got to get going. Send me an email and we'll talk more about it. Okay. Thank you for calling in, friend.
Okay.
This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm sorry, we have to be going. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Don't forget Bonnie Bassler, which will be attached to my Facebook page, I think, so that you could see it. We'll be with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand at, by the way, it's Armand at thepositivemind.com if you want to send me an email.
And we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy after all these years. I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old no fool for love songs that whisper.